Welcome to the first episode of Takeoff, a podcast where we dive into the trends and technologies shaping the future of aviation and automotive and the people behind it. Just a quick note, the views and opinions shared here are of the hosts and the guests and not necessarily reflective of Arrigo International PLC or their official stance. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Some forward-looking statements may come up, which are just projections and are subject to change. Now, with that out of the way, I'm Sunil Houston, and today I'm joined by the CEO and co-founder of Arrigo International PLC, David Keane. Welcome, Dave.
Our first podcast off the roof.
Professional.
Oh, no, this is amazing. Except for the fact we're on wired headphones, which I think for a technology company, not so good.
I think we're a little step behind, but I also still write notes. So, you know, there's still room for the old and the new.
Love it.
So speaking of which, I feel like on our first episode, we really just need to dive into who we are, why we think we have any background in automotive and aviation. So our listeners know we kind of know what we're talking about. And of course, that brings us to you and why we have you as our first guest. Break it down for us. Tell us how Arrigo started, because I'm guessing you didn't just roll out of bed and say, I think I'm going to make an autonomous vehicle today.
Well, I might have done. I can't remember. I can't remember. It's been so long. But a bit of history, I suppose. My background really started in the automotive industry. When did I start? Back in 1982. Makes me incredibly old. But from 82 until 1993. Wise, yeah. That's why all this grey hair up here. So 92, 93, I finished and took voluntary redundancy at Rover Group, and I'd worked for Rover and Honda and BMW and Jaguar Land Rover, of course. And I thought the reason I left is because my last post was actually working in special vehicle operations at Rover. And it was a really tiny team, 30 people delivering all these cars in super fast time. So at that time, it was like 7 years to get a car into production, and we were given the task, how to do that in 14 months. So this was super exciting. You know, I'm in really fast work, and I really loved it. And then, unfortunately, I was dragged back into mainstream, back into the 7 year cycle, and I thought, oh, I can't do that. I want to do something different. So I thought, I'll take voluntary redundancy, and how hard could it be? I'll just go and do it myself. And how hard could it be? I always say that. How hard can anything be? How hard can it be to get an autonomous vehicle to work? Turns out it's really hard. It's really hard. But anyway, I started in my box room at home, worked there for 9 months, did contracting on my own, we can unpack this in different shows later on, but working for Pininfarina on some amazing projects for the Sultan of Brunei and other people like this, for Bentley and Ferrari, and worked at Ferrari in Italy and did all these things. And 9 months later, I thought, we need to expand this. So I said to my brother, why don't you come and join me? And literally, he and I have developed the company to where we are today.
I love that, actually. That's something that really drew me into the company, was that it's a family business at heart.
Yeah, yeah. They always say don't work with friends, family, or animals. And I always say we're working with two out of those three, but I'm not going to tell you which two.
we'll keep the listeners guessing.
But it's always been a passion of mine about technology, and that's why my background's electronics and software, and just creating things and just designing things that are going to make a difference. And so set up the company. And even today, you know, automotive is a real big part of the company and what we do and who we do it for. So the likes of Jaguar Land Rover, Aston Martin, Bentley, Rolls-Royce, Morgan, McLaren, all these people we're working with. So really fantastic. And you can imagine, 30 or 40 years ago, it was really exciting turning a light bulb on and off. You know, that was the heart of electronics. And now electronics and software is into everything on a vehicle. So, you know, that has really changed the landscape. And of course, we've got electrification now. So all that sort of stuff. And all that was going great. And then about 10 years ago, I was part of a government initiative called UK Automotive Council, which was bringing automotive and the UK government together. And they were looking at what do we do for the future? And they were looking at what's called sticky technologies, where could the UK have the most value and get the most bang for the buck out of government funding. And one of those channels, one of those sticky technologies, was going to be connected and automated vehicles. And so I was part of the first ever thoughts, really, by the government and industry about how we start doing this in the UK and developing companies and developing a supply base in the UK. And that's what got me into automated vehicles. We did some projects which were government funded. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe we could do the whole vehicle and maybe we could get some software engineers and get all the really clever people to make it drive itself. And for the last 10 years, that's what we've been doing.
That's so exciting. And it's, I love how sticky, by the way. I don't think I've ever heard you use that. Sticky. It's what they're looking for.
Technology. Yeah, they're really things that are going to stick around for a long time. And because they stick around for a long time, they're worth investing into. So at the time in 2014, you know, battery technology, we should be in batteries because batteries are going to be the thing for the future. So that was one of the sticky technologies and electrification in terms of motors and inverters and things like that. So all these things were looked at and the government started to put some money into it. And we were very good in that we applied for lots of government grants, which helped us develop the company, the products and the team. And then, of course, we poured literally every pound note that we made in the automotive side. We put that in as well. And so that's why we took the company a long, long way with no investment at all other than grants and P&L cash generation until, of course, as we all know, we floated the company just over 2 years ago on the London Stock Exchange on AIM.
So 28 years, though. It was all going through, you know.
Yeah. Well,
that's amazing.
The whole company has really been a family right from the word go from the two of us. My mum has worked here. My dad's worked here. My wife. I tried to fire them so many times, but they just kept coming back. You know, it's just sticky.
Terrible.
Yeah. Sticky. I also have what are called boomerang employees. Those are the people who have left, but gone on to do brilliant things, and then they've come back to the company. So my best boomerang employee has left and come back three times. So we have a little chart on the wall with the different people who have boomeranged there and back. And it's really great because obviously there's some people you never want to come back to your company because you think, oh, thank goodness they've gone. But there's a really good philosophy in having people leave your company because they gain a whole load of different experiences and knowledge. And when they come back to the company, they are so much more, you know, productive, constructive. They've seen more. And I think, you know, people worry about people leaving a company. I never worry about
it. I was going to say that is so the opposite from so many people's stances. Like once you leave, it's almost like, okay, goodbye. You're going to know what you missed as soon as you left. So I think that's so interesting that you take it a completely different way and actually almost invite it. You're like, good luck, go out. Godspeed, come back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And remaining friends and being able to talk because you know what it's like in every industry. It's, you know, you bump into everyone every day.
The smallest world.
It's the smallest world. And I think it's really important to keep those contacts. And actually, some of the people who have left us, even though they haven't come back, they've gone on into other companies that we're now, they're either suppliers to us or they're customers. So,
well,
you know,
we'll
that propagation.
That further episode. It's just all about telling. Yeah, it's all about telling those stories and how does that look and where did it take you and who came back? We'll have some guests on the show for sure to tell them what drew them back in. But speaking of your brother, just taking it back to a family business, did you guys fight about the name of the company?
No, because I named the company and Graham had to put up with it. So
history, like how did it come to mind, Origo?
Well, there was two bits of the company. Originally, it was called Richmond Design and Marketing Limited. That was the first name. And actually, today, it's still the trading company, although it just sits under the PLC company. But that started out because I was sat in my parents' lounge at home. I'd just broken the news to them that I was leaving Rover. And bearing in mind, I was 29 and I'd got a really first-class job, two company cars. You know, I was quite senior in the company. And I announced to my mum and dad, I'm chucking all that in and I'm going to go it alone. And they were like, you crazy, you know, you mad. What are you thinking? And I said, and I've come up with a name. It's called Richmond Design and Marketing. And they said, where on earth did you get that from? And at the time in the 90s, Richmond in Surrey, in the UK, for our international listeners, Richmond in Surrey was the place. It was up and coming. It had people called yuppies. Have you ever heard of a yuppie?
They say yuppie in the US as well.
Oh, do they? I think it's, is it young and upcoming person of whatever? There'll be something in there. We can put it in the show notes. And I thought, well, this is great. Every yuppie is coming from Richmond, so we'll have Richmond. And then I love design, so design. And then I thought, I'm never going to manufacture anything ever again. I'm not going to do that. I'm done with manufacturing. So I'll just market stuff. I didn't really know what marketing was, but I just thought I'd just put it in. So I called it Richmond Design and Marketing Limited. And my dad just sighed and looked at me, you know. And the reason was because he knew, and I didn't really, that manufacturing was really in the blood. And
such a hot word now too.
Yeah, and just a little bit before we skip on, and I, as I say, I could unpack this for years. We could do 3 years of episodes, but a little story just to tell you, I did a job for Ferrari, and it was on door systems on one of the Ferraris, and they said, "Oh, could you make us some prototype door little link leads?" So I came home, made the link leads in my spare room at home. Put them in a box, shipped them off to Ferrari, put my own first invoice in the box. 10 harnesses, £20 each, £200. Anyway, about a month and a half later, a very nice lady in accounts phoned me up and said, "We've got your invoice, thanks very much, but we think you've made a mistake. I think you've missed a nought off the end. Shouldn't it be 10 harnesses at £200 each?" And I said, "Oh, wow, sorry. Yeah, of course. Oh, silly me." And that was, and I got paid 2,000 instead of 200. And that was the first time it really hit me that actually there's money to be made in low volume manufacturing. And so we immediately went into manufacturing of low volume products. So these things happen.
And this just briefly, because of course we were going to keep this a shorter episode, but I think it's exciting and I want to dive in a bit here. You know, our roots from automotive taking us on quite a large leap into the aviation space. You know, tell us what kind of drove that and what we're thinking the future will be in that space.
Yeah, so we chose to get into autonomous vehicles and technology, but we made a conscious effort to not go into road-going vehicles. That's too hard for a company like us. You need so many million dollars to, you know, or even billions of dollars to do it. So we wanted to focus on something really that we could make a definite impact into. And I thought it got a business case. So first off, we did passenger vehicles because the government in the UK was supporting that. And then we made some passenger vehicles, which we'll talk about in other shows, but they've been very successful. So successful that we had a phone call one day from British Airways saying, "We love what you're doing on passenger vehicles, but we're not interested in that. What we're really interested in is, can you move our baggage and cargo around Terminal 5 at Heathrow?" And in 2019, that's what we did. We made the first vehicle that did that. And that really opened a door into this huge market, global market. And that's where we are today. And that's why we've listed the company. That's why we've raised the capital. And that's why we've grown the team and also the open the companies around the world that are working on this stuff. So, and of course, all that stuff I was talking about on automotive, we're transferring all that knowledge and know-how into the vehicle technology and how you build the vehicles and design them. So they really sit hand in hand. So really pleased that we've got that automotive and that autonomous part of the company, because they really sit hand in hand. And also one thing, they really step us up over the, any competition from what we can achieve and how quickly we can move. So yeah, all good.
Yeah, even starting in public transit, like we really got that crazy operational domain, that experience, and then putting that into the aviation space just is a natural next step. And for those of you who haven't, you know, heard of Aurigo that are just listening in, as you mentioned, we are global. You're seated in Coventry in the United Kingdom. I am a U.S. citizen that's sitting in Ottawa, Canada, representing the British flag from afar. And of course, we have our new office in CVG and an office in Singapore. So very excited to show the growth that we've made through the automotive space, jumping into autonomous, and ultimately now really focusing on that autonomy in the aviation space. So one last thing to wrap it up. You touched on it in the beginning with the technology and the inventions. I think it's so interesting to see how technology is involved. If you had to choose like a 100-year stretch that you would love to be alive to see technology, it doesn't have to be like 1800 tonight, you know, it doesn't have to be even. What would you say is the best 100 years to be alive?
So I think there's two answers to that. I think the period that I've been alive has been transformational, because if you think in my lifetime, we didn't have a mobile phone, we didn't have a laptop, we didn't have a lot of the gadgets. Look at vehicle technology, look at what we've done in terms of putting the man on the moon, all these things. But if you jumped forward another 100 years, what would I like to be doing? I think I'd like our autonomous vehicles to be loading the cargo onto a Mars mission on Mars for the suitcases for you and I or other people who have traveled there. Wouldn't that be cool?
I love it. I always say, even though, you know, of course, warmth and heat and the ease of today's modern technologies is amazing, I always think, if you think way back to the end of the 1800s, where, you know, all of a sudden you are being able to go from like sending a letter by horseback to the first mobile phone, to turning on a light bulb, and then of course to like the first automobile, and then just landing on the moon, and then you die. That's crazy. That, I mean, you're walking, you're riding a horse, you're in a vehicle, you see a plane fly, you see something land on the moon. So,
well, I think there's a stat that says, I think that from the moment the car was invented, it only took 15 years for everyone to leave horses behind and go to cars.
It's pretty incredible, right? And yet we are still...
Look at what we're doing now. How quick will it be that every airport is automated around the world? Really quick.
I think so. And I mean, it's a hot buzzword now, and we'll keep going. Keep going and see how it takes off.
How it takes off. Oh, what a segue into the end of the first podcast. I love it.
I love it. Okay. Well, everyone, thanks so much for watching. Of course, this is the property of Aurigo International PLC, so please do not distribute without permission. Thanks so much for tuning in. On the next episode, we are going to actually start to dive into the tech, the trends, probably kicking off with automation in the ground service equipment industry. So stay tuned for that. Dave, thanks so much for having this podcast happen. It's very exciting.
Fantastic. I think it's really exciting. Great. Number one. Let's see what number 221 looks like.
I love it. Cheers.
And thanks, Dave.
Thanks for listening.